Soul Talk Podcast is your guide to all things wellness. On this podcast, you'll find many episodes with the scope and focus on health, wellness, and life. Welcome to episode 37 of Soul Talk Podcast. This episode is Deborah Gladwell sharing her story on overcoming the traumas and dealing with her healing journey and the traumas of her sexual abuse from her childhood. In this episode, Deborah talks about lots of different modalities that she has used on her healing journey, such as Cambo, ayahuasca, and she talks about her experience of them and magic mushrooms, different things that have come up for in the healing journey and working with the plant medicine, and also how she uses her daily sacred practices such as dance, mirror work, and compassionate inquiry and journaling to help her to process and integrate. In this episode, we also talk about overuse of plant medicines and how that can be dangerous. We talk a little bit about psychosis, and Deborah shares how you can get in touch with her at the end to book a Cambo session with her on a one-to-one basis. She's already carrying out that work as a Cambo practitioner. So have a listen, and thank you for being here. So, Deborah, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Carla.
I know you're on to share your story today on your experience growing up with sexual abuse.
Yes.
And how that surfaced in you and how you are dealing with that and how you're now in a position to help other people who have been through the same thing. And you've been called to share your story,
mm-hmm.
In that it being a massive part of your soul's purpose on this earth is to share your story and help other women who have been through the same thing.
Yes.
And it's a really powerful story, and it's a really powerful purpose. So thank you. And I'm just going to invite you now to share your story, and we'll get into the modalities and your work that you're doing a little bit later, but first of all, just for you to share your story. And I know that you initially started to have experiences of triggers and knowing that you needed to go into this work when you were 17. Mm. So talk to me about that.
So I blocked out being sexually abused. It was whenever I was 17, I had my Adam, and I remember feeding him, and he was literally as we had fitted in the palm of my hand, and all these memories started coming to me. And to be honest, I didn't even know they were memories. I thought they were just thoughts, and I was kind of like, why am I thinking these things? And as the time went on, it was just more memories, and I realized that they weren't thoughts, they were memories. And it kind of really started there, like everything kind of spiraled. I went into self-destruct mode. I didn't know how to deal with this because it was a family member. I didn't know who to turn to. I just wanted to block it out, so I turned to alcohol, basically. Alcohol and drugs. And it's not something that I enjoyed doing. I actually hated drinking and hated taking the drugs, but it was just like that one night of freedom, that one night of not remembering, not thinking about the traumas. And I think I was about 22 when I told my mummy, and she asked me, was I dreaming, and almost brushed it under the carpet immediately. And that then became a big problem for me. Again, it's like you don't know who else to turn to, because if your mother is doing something like that, then who else is going to do anything for you, do you know? So I remember going to Nexus in the town, and it was a male counsellor, and I, like, obviously with my traumas being a male, you know, around males, I didn't go back. I went to a lot of counselling, local counselling for a few years, and to be honest, nothing was really working for me. I tried antidepressants, and things just kept spiralling, and it was only then 2 years ago that I came across a page, and it was the combo, and it was, I just remember reading Helps Heal Trauma, and I just, that was it, I booked it. I was just like, right, I'm doing this. Didn't even have a clue what I was getting myself into. I just seen that it helps heal trauma, and I was like, right, I'm going for this. I knew that I needed to do something, because it got to a point where I just didn't want to live. Things got too heavy for me, so I knew I needed to do something.
And the lack of support from your mummy, did that affect your relationship with her?
That did, yeah. I was angry at her, angry at the closest people to me, like my son. When I was in relationships, I was angry at my partners. I just was constantly lashing out. I held a lot of resentment towards my mum. I still do, in a sense. Like, I love her to pieces. I really genuinely do. But there's still anger there that I only realised that I was holding on to just recently. But me and her relationship has definitely been up and down for years. Always through drink, arguing. If we couldn't have a drink together, it turned into big, massive arguments, because it's the only time that we could speak about this. It's the only time it was ever brought up, and it just turned so nasty. And our relationship's great now, but for years, like, it was so bad.
And was there a point whenever, you know, you were asking questions or things were coming up for you on your healing journey, which we'll get to, that you were discussing with or asking for clarity on, or verbalizing that you had these memories that were shut down or denied?
I don't even think that they were shut down or denied. I do believe that my mummy definitely believes me, and always has done, but I feel like it's just her accepting it and her not being able to support me and show me the love that I needed then.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that there was never no disbelief at all. Mm. It's just the lack of, I suppose, emotionally, she wasn't emotionally intelligent enough to kind of guide me through what I needed to do, you know?
Yeah. And then, like, obviously you don't place blame, because you're like, well, everybody's been on their own journey.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody is the way they are for whatever they've been through and all the rest of it. But as daughters, you just expect this level of support from the person who brought you into the world. So it's hard.
Yeah. I think back then it was not understanding any of this. It's the lack of awareness on my behalf. Obviously that's where the resentment came into it. But now, obviously, you know yourself, with going into all this work, it's, you understand then their traumas, and like, they, it's obviously that now I'm at that stage where I can forgive her and understand that she wasn't able to help me because she's not in that place herself. So but obviously back then it was a lot of confusion. Why is my mummy not protecting me or even hugging me? Like, this day she still hasn't hugged me or asked me, am I okay? Or I feel like sometimes when I talk about what I'm doing to heal this, she kind of feels so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just having that awareness that she's just not at that level to understand.
Yeah. But that's the uncomfortable, like the discomfort coming in because you've stepped into this mothering yourself role.
Yep.
And you're now having to show up for yourself how your parents weren't able to.
Well, this is it. It's we become our own parents. We have to parent, reparent, basically, our inner child.
Doesn't that suck?
No. But it's like, it's almost like a bittersweet. It's like so hard, but it's so rewarding at the same time. I actually do quite enjoy it.
Yeah, well, me too. I do and I don't. So you were 17 when you started having the memories and all that.
Yeah.
What age did the memories go back to?
I actually thought it was about 6, and it's like only, it was through a compassion inquiry session a few weeks back, I realised I was in P1.
Okay.
It was going on. Before, like, I don't know how far back even before that, but so I would say about 5. Probably about 5. Yeah.
Which is such a key age for a child.
Yeah, it's actually quite scary when you think about it, and it's that age even when you're going to start school and all that going on, and like I just remember school was like my worst nightmare. It was like I had so much going on, and I just, like, my mummy, I was supposed, it's like I always hated leaving my mummy, and my mummy walking away and leaving me to school, because I'm like, no, like, please come back and get me, protect me, and yeah.
That actually came up in a healing session for me, was the 4-year-old being left at school, and then programming that as that you're unwanted or unloved because your parents are leaving you there, but you're just being dropped to school.
It's actually quite traumatic, like, isn't it?
It's so traumatic. Yeah. So traumatic. And so after you started having these memories and everything at 17, that wasn't the beginning of your healing journey, was it?
No. Like I say, I honestly didn't know what to do or who to turn to. I tried counselling, and I think I done counselling for about 6 years. And to be honest, counselling is so different to what I do now. Counselling is really basically you talking about how you're feeling on that day. So it's not really digging deep. We never dug deep or anything. And at the time when I was doing the counselling, I was actually in a very abusive relationship for 3 years of it. And my sessions were all about that. So we barely touched up on what I really needed to touch up on. So
yeah,
like, oh god, I'm not down in counselling at all. Like, it's just what I do works better for me.
Yeah, and I get that. And I have this conversation with some of my clients too that I work with on a one-to-one basis, because yes, there is a place for traditional therapy and counselling, but some people like you and I need the spiritual element and digging deep into like the inner child work and stuff like that.
Of course, like my clients, actually a lot of them would be like, why do you put yourself through this? Like, and I'm like, but me putting myself through this and sitting with this pain is like helping me like so much. I know it can be really painful at times, but the beauty is in the pain. It's like you have to sit with that pain to be able to heal up.
Yeah.
That's the only way to heal up.
Yeah, and like you've done a lot of work with the body and unraveling that from the body. So talk to me a wee bit about that. Talk to me a wee bit about when your healing journey began.
Well, my healing journey began, it was last January. So that's coming up to 2 years. And going into it, obviously, it's that story of being sexually abused. That's constantly replaying in my head every day. And it's learning, like, obviously going into it, it's like learning that the story is never going away. That story is a part of you now. And I could never get my head around people saying, you need to drop the story, you need to detach from the story. And
who said that?
A lot of people say it, and it just—it's not the story. It's about what it does to you. Do you know, the story is always going to be there. You have to almost accept that story. Like, I accept that. I actually think there's a lot of beauty in my story now, where I see that as like a big traumatic thing. But part what my story's done for me, what my trauma's done for me, it's there's a lot of beauty in that. So it's like, it's not the story that you need to heal. It's the body, because we store trauma in our cells, our muscles. Like, they store the memories. So it's the basically the body we need to heal rather than the story.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. And so talk to me about your journey then with healing the body. And I know you've been doing a lot of, I know you've done a lot of ayahuasca, which I really want to talk about some of your experiences. Yeah. And mushrooms as well, mm-hmm. which I really want to hear about some of your experiences. And then you've not just done Cambo, but you've actually went and trained in Cambo. So you're now facilitating that for your clients.
Yes.
And you're now attuned in your Reiki up to level 2 as well, which is amazing also. And obviously great for you to be able to hold that space for other people. So talk to me a wee bit about how you kind of got onto the route of healing and doing the work. It started with Cambo, is that
right? Started with Cambo. Like I say, I'd seen an advertisement and I just jumped into it. I was kind of almost looking at like the likes of DMT. And I'd kind of researched into that. The Joe Rogan podcast, he had a lot of people on doing it, and was researching going over to Mexico, and then I seen the Cambo, and just that word, helps heal trauma, I jumped into it. I was like, no, I need to do this. And I sat with Cambo. My first shipment was last January with Tapping Into Good Health, or Tap Into Good Health on Instagram, Patrick. And I had started off doing a lunar cycle, which is 3 and 28 days.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, it was quite intense. But I really thought I was getting into it, and that was going to take my traumas away. And it was definitely, like, that didn't happen. It literally scratched the surface. That's what it does. It kind of opened, for me, it opened a lot of doors.
What came up?
It was just releasing a lot of anxiety. Like, that was my biggest thing and what was holding me back. Like, I couldn't have socialized without alcohol. Mm-hmm. Like, even with my really good friends, I just couldn't work out why I never felt comfortable. And it was nothing to do with them. It was me. I was so, like, sociably awkward. But if I had a drink in my hand, I was, like, a completely confident person. But deep down, like, I was the complete opposite.
Yeah.
So this literally took away, honestly, all my anxiety. I haven't had anxiety from it. And it allowed me then to go and do other, like, workshops and other ceremonies.
Yeah.
Then.
So then the more you done, the more sort of started coming up.
Yeah. Well, I already knew about my traumas, and with getting into the likes of ayahuasca, it was a lot more intense. Like, a lot more came up, it showed me a lot more of where I needed to heal. It wasn't just the sexual abuse, it was like, it was a lot of anger towards my mother.
A lot of anger coming from that inner child who just wanted to be
loved,
protected and loved, and to feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually were talking earlier about, like, the chakra system and your sacral being blocked and that, and that, and people listening who aren't into chakras will be like, these two are crazy. But, like, it is what it is. But that's different for you now, isn't it? Like, you've moved into even tantric work and tantric massage and that sort of stuff that's really helped you to connect with the body. And we were talking about how your purpose is to be telling your story and to help women who have went through the same as you. And you know that not your purpose is not just to tell your story, but to help.
It's to bring the awareness. It's to bring the awareness around the what the abuse can do to the body. Because with me, it was I really didn't realise how much fear I had around sex and being in relationships and never really having that sex drive and never really wanting to have sex with my partners. I knew something was wrong, but I couldn't really put it together. Like, it was to do with the abuse. I actually questioned my own sexuality. And then obviously along the way I realised that the abuse can cause blockages and obviously with the fear especially, but it can actually cause a lot of blockages in the yoni, in the vagina. It'll stop the libido. And that's just what I'm working through at the minute with the tantric. The tantric is something I only get into in July. And it's helped massively, and I've still a long way to go, but I'm happy with where I'm at with that.
Yeah. And how else do you feel that the trauma has been showing up in your relationships? So in your relationships with in sexual relationships, in your relationships with your family, friends?
So it was just, a lot of it would have been with family and friends, would have been the anger. I wouldn't have been able to regulate my emotions. I didn't know how to regulate my emotions. I don't, like, our society, most of our society doesn't know how to regulate our emotions. So it's holding on to that anger and expressing it in unhealthy ways. I remember one of my partners who was amazing. Like, he just couldn't take my anger. He had to leave me. It was just too much. But my last relationship sexually, I wasn't fully honest with him, to be honest. It was me trying to word things in a way that I felt comfortable, but without, suppose if I have held on to a lot of embarrassment about the sexual side of things. It was me not being able to get turned on, and me needing that safe space, that safetiness to be able to enjoy sex, enjoy the pleasure. And I was asking for passion of him, more tender, more slowness, and he couldn't do it. So it's not, obviously our relationship is no longer, but it's like, that's where I'm at now. I need somebody who understands my traumas, who understands the what it's done to my body. Like, I do need safetiness. Obviously with my introduction to sex at a very young age, it wasn't great, and it's created that really unhealthy relationship with sex, and it's created that unsafetiness within my body. And it's about me now just working on the safetiness myself and with the tantric work.
Yeah. And there is, like, definitely a culture of just getting in there and having sex. Like, there's very little intimacy in a lot of sexual interactions. It's just like the main goal is the orgasm, and get it done quickly, and that's it, you know. And there's no real time taken, I suppose, like, and the world we live in too, you know, with work and stresses, and time is such a, like, constraint for people, that it's not, the intimacy just isn't there for a lot of relationships. But it's so important, because I actually went to a workshop a load of months back. It was like the female erotic, it was called, and it actually talked about women in general. Like, we all need, a man can get an erection and have sex whenever he has an erection, and that's it, but we need time to, like, get to that place, hence why foreplay and all that is so important. And don't get me wrong, I can't be annoyed with foreplay sometimes either. I'm just like, I'm tired, just do it.
Just get it quickly.
And that's fine if that's my permission. But like, physiologically in your body, your clitoris needs time to, like, you get an erection, we get erections too as women. And we need time to, like, warm up, and for the vagina to, like, open in a sense, and obviously, like, get wet and all the rest of it. So that's so important, that safety, and, like, your body physically feeling ready to have sex. But it's even, like, tenfold more important for women who have experienced sexual abuse, who need that, you know, to feel safe before, like, maybe to be told that they're loved. You're not saying that you'll only be having sex with people who you love, but to have to be having sex with people who you trust, and who understand you, and who have the time to, like, because ultimately what you're doing really is holding that space for each other.
Well, this is
it?
What it's about. It's definitely about holding the space. And if, like, just touching up on what you were saying there, it's like with the quickies, like somebody who's been sexually abused, like
the quickies
it's, and they're not taking the time. It's well, what for me anyway, it's like, especially like rough sex and stuff like that, that's actually damaging the inside of my vagina even more than what it already has been. And it's like, I've noticed, but just from doing the tantric massages, that there's a lot of like knots, and like the muscles are really tight, and like that's just not from the sexual abuse, that's from like all these other times that I've had sex and not supposed, not knowing me, not knowing even what was going on then, but the supposed the dryness also, and you know, obviously not having that that lube in a sense to kind of stop that damage. But yeah, that's what the tantric massages is basically all about. It's about undoing the damage basically that's been done,
and also your, that's your body storing in that area
memories,
your beliefs, your you know, emotions and all.
And
all
it, this is the thing with doing the tantric, it's not just the massaging, it's, there's a lot of emotional release with the tantric as well. There's energy work done throughout it, and we, like I say, we store traumas in our muscles, our cells, and the, obviously with the sexual abuse there is a lot of memory down there. So like when she's massaging, and it's done so gently, it's there's pressure points that she needs to go to, and I realized, like, I didn't realize how numb I was down there until I started these tantric massages recently, and it's like there's no sensation, no feeling whatsoever, and all she's doing is rubbing that out, so then I can start to feel the sensation to then feel the pleasure.
Yeah. And you've been, so you've done your level one in tantric training.
I've done
for
my
massage.
Level one, yeah.
And from then, you have had two tantric massages?
Yes, I've had two. I've had one, I got one last week by, can I mention her name? Yeah. Fiona Dat, the holistic therapist on Instagram.
Oh, right.
The amazing
Fiona. I didn't know she done that.
Yeah.
I follow her.
She's amazing. And it's, again, she's creating this safe space that I didn't have as a child. So she's creating this safe space with me. And it's just, it's a learn. Even like my breasts, they were very armored. Like there was no sensation there. And it's just really just bringing, like her massaging softly and bringing the energy round to this area. And I mean, literally she takes her time with everything. It's like a 3-hour session, you know. And
is it?
Yeah, she's massaging you for about 3 hours, and it's just basically what it's doing is it's telling your muscles that this is okay, this isn't trauma anymore, like this is okay. And that's basically what tantric is. People have this perception of tantric as being kinky, and it's not. Like, obviously eventually, once I, the sensation is fully there with me, there may be a time where I could possibly orgasm during it, but there that's not what it's about.
Yeah.
And it basically, it's about teaching my body that it's okay to feel pleasure, you know. And again, it's about boundaries is so important. Like, as obviously as a child, there was no boundaries, I had no boundaries, but it's about allowing yourself to speak up for yourself. If there's an area where you don't want touch, then you voice that.
Yeah.
And the Fiona would obviously not, she would respect your boundaries and go somewhere else. And if you like something, then also you can say, can you go back to that area? And she'll go back to that area. And it's, again, it's about that, like, it's okay to ask for pleasure again.
And that ties into what we were actually talking about earlier. Before we started recording, having fun.
Yeah.
So like, it's like letting yourself know that you're worthy of experiencing pleasure and fun and joy in whatever way that looks. Because like we were talking earlier about how we don't really know what our type of fun is. And I had this conversation the other day with my boyfriend, Ran. He loves when he gets a wee shout out in my episodes. We were talking about this the other night, and I was saying, like, I need to have more fun. Because, like, my daily sacred practice in cacao and my crystals and putting myself in a protective bubble and doing all this stuff. Yeah. Because I'm on my own journey too. It's like, but where's the fun? And, like, I was saying to him, you know, watching Joe Rogan and learning about the pyramids and talking about aliens and UFOs and
my favorite, like, topics.
Yeah, and like it's so much fun, but like, is it really fun? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm still discovering what my fun is, and I definitely know that I need a tantric massage for sure.
Yeah.
Especially with a lot of stuff going on in my life at the minute. But I could not be naked. I just couldn't do it.
And then that's your boundary. Do you know what? That is your boundary. The thing is, before the session, you have a consultation and you set boundaries. So that's how it goes. But the thing with fun, it's like, that stems from so many things, doesn't it? Like we were talking earlier, I don't know how to have fun because of my upbringing. It was, you're always being told off. Like every time you were having fun, it was like you're getting shouted at, you're too noisy, and it really affects your adult life.
Yeah.
But it's like with my healing, I realized just the past couple of months that it's so important to have fun through healing. Like I took my healing so serious, like where it got me into a really bad way, like mentally in psychosis, and I went to Bali for four weeks, and it was while I was over there I realized what I was doing to myself, and it's something that I'm trying to bring into my healing now, is the fun side of things. It doesn't need to be serious all the time. And suppose tantric is, it's not fun because I haven't got to that stage yet, but I still have a lot of emotional releases, but soon it will be fun.
Yeah, and you were talking about dancing as well. Yes. Like one of your daily sacred practices would be dancing.
Somatic dancing. It's something that I only really started doing, I would say, the past few months. I started it at the Secret Raves, and I kind of got into it myself every morning. I would do about 10 minutes, and it's just putting a good banger on, a good dancey song, and just jumping and shaking all the trauma out. It's such a powerful release.
It is, because I do it too.
I love it.
I love in the mornings putting the music on and dancing, and the somatic shaking is a big part of my practice too. But the dancing is fun.
Like I do my somatic dancing in the mornings, but I would probably dance about an hour every day.
Yeah.
And I have my amazing playlist, and it's all medicine songs, it's all healing songs, and it's my way of expressing myself. And it's so crazy because when people talk about being creative, I used to be like, I don't know, I'm not creative, but I sing and dance every single day. That's me being creative. And I actually blocked out a part of my life, my creative part. When I was a child, I done a lot of dance competitions, and it was all contemporary dance, and I played the trumpet, I done school plays, and I completely shut that out. And it's like, now this is all coming back up, and I'm starting to remember all these wee things about myself, and it's my wee ritual every morning.
Yeah. But that's nice, because I think when you start to do like your inner child work, art come up for me,
right?
Painting, and I do that. I don't do it regularly, but I do now own a whole paint set.
Wow.
And when I feel like doing it, I'll get it all out and make a mess. And it's just nice,
therapeutic.
It's really therapeutic.
Yeah.
But I love singing too, and
singing's the best, isn't
it? And dancing, and like I think like the culture that we live in, I know you don't drink anymore, but like and you're learning how to be in those spaces and still have fun without mm-hmm. having to get drunk
yeah.
or whatever. And I feel like our culture that we live in is very much like, if you want to like sing and dance in, you have to get blocked first before you do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it's so strange because I had my first sober night out there on Tuesday, mm-hmm. on Halloween. And my friend got
Where'd you go?
We went to the Union Bar.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and we were drinking water the whole night. Like, it was brilliant. But it was up in her, up in my friend's house, and she got the nose echo. And we danced up in her house for hours before we even went out. But it was like having that glass. It's so mad that you become attached to this glass.
I know.
Because that's, you're so used to dancing with a glass in your hand. But mm-hmm. it, for some reason, it was like a security thing for me. It yeah. made me feel almost like I was drinking. And it was, I was allowed to dance then. Isn't
yeah.
that crazy?
It's crazy, yeah. yeah.
And then when I went out, now I didn't, I was fine when I went out. I think it was just like.
Did you not need to have anything in your hand when you were out?
No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting.
Yeah,
because I've had a few non-alcoholic beers lately,
mm-hmm.
like in the last load of months, and it's funny that like without that non-alcoholic beer, you don't feel part of it, but because you have a beer in your hand, even though it's non-alcoholic, it just feels like
you're part of
everything.
Isn't that crazy?
Which is so yeah. stupid. Because I don't drink. I still drink, but I don't drink that much anymore.
Yeah.
Because I can't be bothered with it. It makes me anxious. So yeah. Sometimes.
It's the hangover.
Depends who I'm with, I suppose, yeah. when I'm drinking. But, so, talk to me a wee bit about the combo and then the other modalities that you gradually started to get into after you had your combo session. So, I know you've worked with combo, you've worked with ayahuasca, you've worked with mushrooms,
mm-hmm.
so have you had more like stronger or more profound sessions with either of those? Or
to be honest, like there's been moments with each of them where I can go like they were as strong as each other, you know. With the combo, I remember my most profound combo experience was last December at an ayahuasca retreat, and I released a lot of anger through it in regards to my abuser, and like it was crazy because I literally, while I was purging, I felt that anger literally come out of my mouth. Like, it was the most insane feeling, and obviously that's the energy, you know. And it was crazy because then straight after that day we had a workshop we were doing, and it was about drawing your trauma in an angel form. And if I hadn't have done that combo, I wouldn't have been able to take part in that.
Mm.
And I was able to draw my abuser in an angel form, and it was so easy for me to do, and I had so much compassion towards him, and it was just releasing that anger through the combo that allowed me to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of like visions or experiences have you seen anything, or have you
with the combo
with
or with
combo
the
or ayahuasca or mushrooms?
Yes, well with the ayahuasca and the mushrooms, they would be more visual for me. My first experience with ayahuasca, the visuals were quite insane.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of demons I was seeing, but it was showing me the fear that I was holding up that I had. There was visuals about my mummy. Like, I went into it with a lot of resentment towards my mummy, and the visuals was she was in a wedding dress and she was crying her eyes out, and she had a really bad marriage previous, and that's when I realised that my mummy couldn't be there for me the way she needed to be there for me because of the traumas that she endured with her marriage, etc. So it was a lot of visuals, yeah. Now, not so much visuals now. Mine's is more emotion.
Mm.
Like, I feel a lot of emotion mm-hmm. through my ceremonies.
And does that show you that you're still unraveling emotion?
Oh, there's a lot of work I still need to do. Like, don't get me wrong, there's still stuff there, like visuals that will be more like, I think it's more thoughts for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of stuff I'm still holding on to. Like, I think it's just down to how much trauma that I've been storing in my body. But yeah, gosh, no, there's still a lot to
Well, we all release. Have a lot to work yeah, on.
Of course.
How do you feel in your body now?
I feel closer to who I am, mm-hmm. who I always have been. I feel a lot safer than what I ever have been. I still know that there's work there that needs to be done. I feel a lot happier than what I've ever been. Yeah, it's strange because I feel so light.
Yeah.
But I'm quite aware of like when things happen, if there's somebody triggering me, I can feel it in my body now. And mm-hmm. I can go and release whatever it is. Whether it's a lot of it can be anger at times, in a really healthy way. Like my technique at the minute I use is screaming into a pillow.
Mm.
I absolutely love it. Or yeah. you can do the whole fucking in a fucking a pillow.
Yeah, that's the first time I heard of that. Yeah. I thought you meant fucking a pillow against the wall, no, but you actually you mean actually like riding a pillow.
Yeah, it's just more. I think it's the hip thrusting, you know, mm-hmm. the pillow.
Well, with hips, so in ancient yogic traditions, and ancient yogic teachings, the hips are a storage and wastage ground for emotions and memories.
Mm.
I would typically say negative emotions, memories, traumas and all that.
Of course.
But I try now to say more so just leave the word negative out because it, you know, it's obviously subjective to people. So people's emotions, memories and stuff cannot necessarily be negative experiences, but they can just bring up a sadness in us or whatever. Yeah. So, and like grief and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So working on the hips and opening the hips helps to release.
The pelvic, isn't it? All the pelvic exercises you do.
Yeah, and yep. like opening yep. the hips, and then that then brings your awareness onto like your jaw and the tension that you hold there and how that ties in with your
it
pelvic
floor. It is crazy because I wore a retainer.
Do you? Do you yeah. grind your teeth?
My retainer has completely wore away where it's like there's holes in it.
Wow.
Like, isn't that mental? Yeah, and I only noticed this the other day and I was like, oh, I need to go and get a new retainer before it wears away to nothing.
Is that why you wore retainers then?
No, I actually wore a retainer because I got braces and it's just you have to wear it every night.
All right.
To keep the teeth straight.
Yeah.
So.
But you're grinding your way through it.
I am literally grinding. Like,
yeah.
Like there's two big holes in the same side. On yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's the same.
That's your tension, like, in the jaw. Like, it's just this clenching yeah. and not using your voice as well. It'll mm-hmm. be interesting to yeah. see after sharing your story today.
Exactly.
Like, what,
yeah.
how going forward and the more work that you're doing with your modalities and stuff yeah. like that. How that maybe changes.
Hopefully.
Because your dentist will be happy anyway. What about, so obviously there is, I'm a huge believer in plant medicines.
Yep.
And we together are also a huge believer that you can abuse or overuse plant medicines.
Yeah.
And you got to a point where you knew that you needed to have a break and let the integration process happen because...
The thing is, I didn't.
Right.
I didn't. I was going through a breakup and I decided to go to Bali, and while I was in Bali it all came to me in Bali. It was that rest of my body, rest of my nervous system. My nervous system was being battered.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing so much plant medicine, so much.
How much?
Well, that year I had done one in February, and then I hadn't done any. It was ayahuasca. I hadn't done ayahuasca until the June. But in the midst of that, I was doing my own mushrooms. I wasn't sitting in ceremony. I was doing mushrooms myself. I was sitting in ceremony as well. But it wasn't just that. I was going to ceremonies every single week and having major releases. Like, I was going to Kundalini activation ceremonies. I was going to all these different ceremonies that were intense on my body.
Mm-hmm.
And I was convincing myself that I was so happy. And it wasn't until I was in Bali and I realized how miserable I was. That was the scary part of it all. I was actually convincing myself that I was happy when mm-hmm. I really wasn't. And it was from taking that break, I realized that how important that was. Like the two ayahuasca ceremonies I sat in June, we do work beforehand, inner work beforehand, but we had done these cards, and the cards, the 2 weeks that I'd done them, were telling me I needed to slow down. And the people who I go to, they were like, now the medicine's being really direct with you here, it's you need to start listening. They were like, it's telling you need to slow down. Like,
how was it telling you need to slow down?
Through like cards and games that we were doing, spiritual games. And again, I wasn't listening. I was still going off and doing, like, I'd done the tantric the week after, I'd done this, and it was like,
what kind of spiritual games were you doing?
I can't remember the name of it, but it's almost like snakes and ladders.
Oh.
But it's like, I can't remember what language it's in. Carla, I don't even want to touch up on that because I don't want to do it any, like,
injustice. Yeah.
Injustice, no, that's, you know? Fine.
Yeah.
But the game, like, there was 10 of us in the ceremony, and you had the roll of 6. And I knew I was going to get the 6. 2 of us out of everybody was the only 2 people that got to play the game. And I pulled the card, like the card beforehand, it was telling me about slowing down. And then the game, the 2 things that I was, you had to roll the dice and the number, whatever you landed on, you had to read the pages out of the book. And the 2 of them were all about slowing down. Like the passages took about 20 minutes for her to read out, you know what I mean? And it was all about slowing down. And I still wasn't listening. And it was like, no, but I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm okay. I was really convinced of myself I was okay. And the only way I can describe it is my body was shriveling up inside me.
Mm-hmm.
It was literally screaming out for me to slow down, and I just wasn't listening.
Just slow down as in just stop taking so much plant medicine and let it all integrate?
Not even just the plant medicine. It was the other modalities that I was doing. Like, there were big, massive releases. I wasn't doing... When I say I wasn't doing integration, I was doing my compassionate inquiry sessions, but realistically, I needed to be doing a lot more. I needed to rest. I needed to have that rest period where I was integrating one thing at a time,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't doing that.
Yeah.
And when I was in Bali, I was able to do a lot of integration. Because I burnt myself the second day I was there and had the isolate, and it was one of the most healing things that I've ever done for myself, is to spend, it was basically 2 weeks by myself in a room, and it was so beautiful.
And you described that as your skin being shed, didn't you?
Well, my whole body burnt. I don't normally burn like that, and like my shins were peeling, my thighs were peeling, everywhere was peeling, and it's like, this has to be the shedding of the skin. It's quite symbolic, but I came back a different person, and a different person, like, even my outlook on healing, on plant medicine, and I love plant medicine, but you can't mess with plant medicine. Like, you abuse it, it's just going to backfire.
Mm-hmm.
It really, really will.
Yeah, so, like, you know, sitting in circle or sitting in ceremony, whether it's with yourself, whether it's with a cup of cacao in the morning in your mm-hmm. kitchen, whether it's ayahuasca in a circle with shamans... Cacao also is a plant medicine, just like ayahuasca is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not a, it just doesn't have psychoactive properties, so therefore you can't have a psychedelic experience.
Yeah.
But every plant medicine, cacao, ayahuasca, mushrooms, any form of psilocybin, cambo, whatever, must be treated with respect, must be treated with gratitude. Must be used with an intention, not just so that you can get a wee hit.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, yeah, like, you need to respect
it. People don't realize how powerful these medicines are. They have spirit, you know. That it's like, you look back to even like our ancestors, the tribes, like they know how to use it properly. But I think our community, with a community full of addiction, also. There's a lot of people out there that will abuse it in that way for their addiction, and
yeah,
it's not to be messed with at all. And I feel like with me basically going into psychosis has made me realise that I will be very selective of when I want to use it, when I want to use these modalities, and I love them. Like, they are honestly have really saved my life, this kind of work, all these plant medicines. But it's only when I get the calling to do it.
Yeah.
I'll be doing it.
And have you anything coming up?
I have a retreat, an ayahuasca retreat in January. I'm gonna do with the people I've done most of my ceremonies with, all my ayahuasca apart from one. All my ayahuasca ceremonies apart from one.
Who are they?
So Flow of Life Holistic is on Instagram, and I don't even know Rudrani's page, but.
So, what is your daily sacred practice look like now?
So I just get up in the mornings and I do my meditation, my dance, and my singing. Like that is my go-to. It's because I am in the middle of healing. Well, this is what it's all about, is healing the inner child. And my inner child love to sing and dance. And I will literally spend an hour singing in front of the mirror and dancing. And I absolutely love it. But it's like I used to do the contemporary dancing. It's me expressing myself. It's not just me like shaking my hips and singing with the hair brush. It's like my singing is like my prayer to myself every morning. And my dancing is just me being me expressing myself through that dance. And moving the way I wouldn't normally move. Like, obviously, it's not the way you would move in a nightclub. It's me moving passionately. And, yeah, it's just there's a lot of meaning with it.
And release.
Yeah, and it's mirror work. I do a lot of mirror work also. It's just my affirmations in the mirror. A lot of inner child work is just my photos, connecting with my photos. And, like, throughout the day, if my inner child doesn't want to do something, I will not be doing it. If she doesn't want to do it, I'm not doing it. It's about me honouring her now. So that's the work I would do daily.
Love that. Every time I want pizza, I'm always like, my inner child wants pizza.
Of course.
And she wants pizza tonight, by the way.
Oh, does so that's what's happening. You get a pizza.
So what about Cambo then? So you've went off and you've done your training in Cambo and you're currently facilitating that for people.
Yes, I done my training in February and it was pretty intense. Okay. So yeah, I done that back in February and as I say, it was just pretty intense. A lot came up and I needed to do a lot of work. I spent February until a couple of weeks ago actually doing a lot of inner work that needed to be done, and didn't feel like I was in the position to hold space for anybody. And yeah, I've started holding space the past month and a half, and I it's going amazing. I love it, and I'm so glad that I can help people on their journeys. So yeah,
good. And you obviously want to work with people who have experienced what you've experienced, but you're also working with whoever needs this medicine.
See, my initial reason for doing the combo course was like my experience with my combo, my combo, and not like I have a lot of love for Patrick, who held space for me, but I had to talk about my traumas. And speaking about my traumas, the male was quite intimidating, and I just remember just wanting to die off, and instead I was like, oh, the anxiety was spiraling. So I just wanted to almost create this space, a female practitioner in our area for women who don't feel comfortable going to a male to have that safe space that, I suppose, that space of being able to open up about that.
And obviously people will know where to find you for book sessions and things like that. It's
feel_2_heal
on Instagram,
and the 2 is
a number, and I'll put it in the notes anyway, the bio.
I would like to actually put anybody that I've worked with along the way that has helped me on my journey, which I feel like everything that I've done has been absolutely amazing for my growth. And I feel like who I've worked with, I will give their details over.
Yeah.
Just in case anybody wants to reach out. Yeah. And
pop them over to me and I'll put them in the notes.
That's great, thank you.
No problem. So like, the reason that we're having this conversation today, really, if abusers had, and perpetrators and, you know, had been brought up in a way that they were taught properly about sex and how to treat women and how the fucking world works, we wouldn't need to be having these conversations, because this pain wouldn't exist in the world.
That's it. It's a domino effect. It's like somebody that's hurt inside is going to hurt somebody else. It's like
hurt people. Yeah. So, I was saying that yesterday.
Like, this is what's made me. Like, this is why I'm able to forgive my abuser. It's that doesn't come from love. That comes from pain. Do you know? There's a. It's that domino effect, and again, I feel like, it's my opinion that a lot of abusers have been abused.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not saying they all have, but like the majority, and again, that's coming from pain. So, that's my understanding of how it all works as a collective is what's got me through my traumas, basically.
Mm. And what do you think could be done to help?
It's the awareness. I feel like, I don't think it's ever going to go away. Like, it's not. But I feel like the reason why I wanted to do this podcast is because sexual abuse is not talked about enough.
Mm-hmm.
There's such shame around it. Like, nobody wants to talk about it. And it's like, why? And I was one of them people. Like, I've always started opening up about my story from I've started this. Even when I did start, it was so hard for me to even say that. Like, I remember my first ceremony, I didn't say anything. I just went, I'm here to heal my trauma, and that was it. And now I find it so easy to do it, because I don't hold any more shame around it. It was not my fault. It's not my shame to carry. And I feel like with people trying to talk about it, even then, I think it should be going around schools, and it needs to be more awareness, because there's me, perfect example. I'm grown up, can't even hold a relationship down sexually, like not knowing what's going on with my body, and not like being so embarrassed about my sexuality, like that sexual side of things, and not being able to open up. Even didn't even want to go to a doctor to see what was wrong with me, just so like embarrassed about this. And when I went to ceremonies, I found out that this is all trauma related, mm-hmm. and like the weight of the world literally lifted off my shoulders when I found this out. Like, mm-hmm. why do people not know that this is what trauma can do to our bodies? Like, it's why do they not know? Like, it's why is it not talked about?
Yeah, it's like almost like as if it's because spirituality, it's probably under the bracket of spirituality in a sense, and spirituality isn't considered to be a discipline like psychology and psychiatry and science and all that, but it is.
I mean, I don't even, and it's like, it's, you look like, I was 17 when I found out about my traumas. I'm now 38. It's like going that much years, like, without, that's 21 years without knowing what is wrong with my body.
Mm-hmm.
And then that there, like I said previously, is the still continuing to have sex and rough sex and damaging my body even more. It's like, This needs to be targeted at like a young age. Like, people need to know about this. If they're going through the same experiences, then they can get this at a younger age, and their lives would be so much different.
Yeah.
I turned to drink, I turned to drugs, because I didn't know what else to do. If I knew all this information a lot of years ago, like, things would be different. Obviously, I know my story is my story, the way it is just how it's all meant to be. But I feel like there needs to be more talk around it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, like, the stats of sexual abuse aren't even really the stats for sexual abuse, because God knows how many cases aren't actually reported.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is your case reported?
I didn't report mine, no.
So there you go, you know what I mean? So a lot of girls, women listening now, who may have reported or not have reported,
mm-hmm.
can still relate to your story.
Yeah.
And all the wee things that you just said, they're like signals and how it can affect your relationships and mm-hmm. your connection with your body and all that, is like such valuable golden information that they can take. It's not I mean, yeah, it should be reported, but that's not gonna necessarily help you.
The body, like, it's not.
So you can still move forward in this healing journey without needing to report. I mean, let's be honest, what's fucking reporting it to the police gonna do?
I know, and it's not
with the world that we live in, and the corrupt systems that we live in.
It's not gonna change it. It's still gonna happen.
Yeah.
But it's also like with my story, like what I'm doing for myself for healing doesn't necessarily mean to say that everybody else has to go and do that. Like, it's that whatever I'm doing is working for me.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean to say that the next person has to go and do tantric. Do you know, there's other modalities there that can heal that. It's there's breath work, there's all amazing these other modalities that can heal the body without going down the road of tantric. In case anybody out there hears tantric and starts panicking, and you know, it's not about just about tantric. It's there's a lot of other things there that can heal this.
Yeah, and as you say, this is your journey.
This
so
is my journey.
Other people might be called to go to counselling.
Yeah,
and that's okay too. Mm-hmm. That was part of your journey.
Well, the compassionate inquiry to me, that's therapy, you know, but it's that dug so deep into my childhood and made me understand myself so much more. It's a lot deeper than just counselling, you know.
And when you're doing compassionate inquiry, do you ask yourself specific set of questions every day, or what way?
Well, I would have done the compassion, it wouldn't be every day, but like now I can kind of pick up, and if something's triggering me, I'll try to sit with that and know where that stems from. I'll try to figure that out. I think it's just with doing the compassionate inquiry for so long, I kind of understand a lot of behaviour, so it's almost like, if something happens or somebody triggers me, I'll know. I'll maybe react slightly, and then I'll always apologize.
Yeah.
Because I know that's not what they're doing. That's from my old wounds.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to add?
I think we've really covered everything. It's just really about the awareness for me, really, in this podcast. Is the main thing, and obviously that there is help out there.
Yeah.
There's so much tools that we can use for our healing.
Yeah.
Do you know, even speaking about it, like I remember my first time speaking about me not getting turned on, like that really killed me to say. That's something that I held on to for years and could not physically say. It was that's what really destroyed me in a sense. And the first day I said it, and somebody was like, yeah, no, that's because you don't feel safe, and da-da-da, and I was like, whoa.
I know, but
if I hadn't have said those words, like, what, do you know, it's like speaking to other people that are going through the same thing, like sitting in women's circles, sitting, do you know, it doesn't have to be plant medicine either, it's like sitting in this community where people are holding these spaces where it's vulnerable, like people are being vulnerable, and it's a safe space to be vulnerable and speak up and open up about what you're going through, and like it's beautiful work. Like, it is, there's so much beautiful places and people that you can turn to out there.
And we know that when you talk about something, or when you just, you know, speak about something, there's a stigma around, or taboo, or shame, or guilt, or whatever, that it takes away its power.
It's exactly, like even this today, like I have held so much shame around this sexual side of things for me, the having the fear of sex, you know, and this is healing for me. Me saying this out loud for people to listen to, anybody to listen to, is major healing for me.
Yeah.
So thank you.
No, and thank you. And I'm sure that a lot of people listening to this now, this conversation alone is extremely healing for them.
Well, hopefully.
And they're prompt to awareness to start the journey of whatever that looks like for them. Yeah. And the first point of contact could be a conversation with you.
Yeah. And I am open to anybody reaching out at all. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm happy enough to give advice. Obviously my journey has been shortened into an hour, you know, so there's a lot more to it, but I'm open to giving advice and direction, suppose, to where they would want to go.
Yeah.
So
well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.